Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. This month, we're going to listen to both new and old. We'll start off with an ART recorded show and finish with a music show from the days of old-time radio. Pursuit was a police procedural that you would have sworn was from the BBC. But no, it was based in Hollywood, using the repertory of Hollywood radio actors. Very few recordings exist, so here's American Radio Theater's version of Pursuit in Petticoat Lane, with Robert Perks as Inspector Black.
Pursuit. A criminal strikes and fades quickly back into the shadows of his own dark world, and then the man from Scotland Yard, the famous Inspector Peter Black, and the dangerous, relentless pursuit when man hunts man. For refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley Spearmint Gum. The delicious, long-lasting, real mint flavor of Wrigley Spearmint cools your mouth and freshens your taste. The good, smooth chewing helps keep you feeling fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. So, indoors, outdoors, at work or play, enjoy chewing Wrigley Spearmint Gum. Wrigley Spearmint. Refreshing. Delicious.
Anything, Moffat?
Not yet, sir.
Streets blocked?
Everyone, sir.
Pistols been issued?
Yes, sir.
Right on, we'll wait.
Getting dark.
Yes, worse luck.
He might have managed to slip off on a Regent Street bus.
We'll have to chance it if they... Hello? That may be something. Come on.
Constable's over there, sir.
Right.
Chief Inspector Black?
Yes?
I spotted him, sir.
You sure?
Oh, definitely, sir. Same description. Grey overcoat and cap. Ran down Maddox Street a second ago.
How did he get through?
He must have been in the street all the time, sir. As the cordon moved down, he ran across the road and into St. George's.
He's in the church now?
Oh, I'm afraid so, sir. According to a woman who just came out, there are four or five other people in there, too.
All right. I want the church completely circled.
Yes, sir.
Moffat and I are going in after him. Don't follow unless I give the word. Pass that along, will you?
Very well, sir.
Come along, Moffat. The call had come through to the information room at the Yard 3/4 of an hour earlier. The firm of Joby and Trent, jewellers on Regent Street, had been a victim of a smash-and-grab attack. In broad daylight, they'd done it. Three men. They'd shot down a pursuing clerk, but the early evening traffic on Regent Street had been so heavy that they had been forced to abandon their car, and so had given us our chance. Patrol cars and flying squad men had formed a cordon, blocking the escape of at least one of the criminals. Moffat and I moved from the warm, still air outside into the cool dusk of St. George's Church.
You think he'll try to shoot his way out, sir?
I hope not.
No, sir.
That looks like the chap. Over there. Grey overcoat, sitting next to that woman. The one with the black tam.
I'm going from the other side, sir, in case he runs for it.
All right, the pew behind.
Right you are, sir.
I beg your pardon. May I have a word with you? Outside. Chief Inspector Black, Scotland Yard.
Clear out. I've got a gun.
I'm aware of that. Come along, please. Quietly now. We don't want any disturbance.
You'll have it if you try to take me.
Oh, please, please don't hurt me, please.
Shut your face. Listen, Mr. Policeman, I'm all prepared for an emergency like this. If you want to see this girl cruel hurt, you just try something.
It won't do you any good, you know.
It'll do her less. I'm walking out of here free as the air, and you're letting me go.
Are we?
You are if you fly. I'm taking her with me.
Oh, no! What do you want me for? Then you know I...
Shut up! Shut up, the lot of you! You, stop your sniveling or I'll do you a mischief. All right, now. Tell the coppers outside to pass me through.
Very well.
You won't let him take me? You won't...
Go on, now.
Once you're in the clear, you've got to let her go.
I'm the one says what I do, Mr. Chief Inspector. Hark now, my gun's in her back. You might hit me all right if you shoot, but she'll get it too.
There'll be no shooting.
Go on, outside, mind your P's and Q's.
I've always thought that the frightful purpose of crime is not the act itself, but the mind. The terrifying unknown mind that controls the act. So it was with this man, short with a too large head, his features pale and sharp. He was frightened for all his bullying, and I knew that the slightest move on our part would end the girl's life. Outside, the street lamps on Maddox Street had been lighted and shone palely against an angry London sunset.
Tell him. Tell him I'm walking to Regent Street with her. Tell him.
You won't go 100 yards.
Nor will she. Nor will
That's she. Enough, Moffat.
No one's to follow, dear.
Let this man go. He's not to be stopped. Constable, get into a car and wireless the men blocking the entrance to Regent Street. Tell them to allow him through.
Right, sir.
That's nice and sensible-like.
Where are you taking me? Where?
Never you mind. Come on.
Don't let him take me, somebody.
I've got to try, sir.
No, Moffat. No, Moffat. We watched them move down the empty street. They appeared as innocent lovers taking a stroll on a warm summer evening, except that death was following every step of the way, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. An hour and a half later, I was in my office at the Yard. Moffat was in the criminal records office awaiting the results of fingerprint tests which had been made in the church. There was no word of the man and the girl. They had been seen jumping into a cab at Argyle Place and Regent Street. A flying squad car had followed but had lost them in traffic.
No word on them yet, sir.
No. What a filthy business. Bad enough they kill for robbery, but this,
Well, we know the man we're after now.
Oh?
Criminal record office traced him. He left fingerprints in the church. William Grice, here's the file.
That may help. Nothing on the other two men, I suppose.
Afraid not, sir. No positive identification.
Oh, what about the car they used?
Stolen, sir.
I thought as much. Chief Inspector Black?
Information room, sir. Message just came in from Woolwich Road Police Station.
Oh.
A man called Harold Pugh, 93 Fenton Street, reports his daughter missing, Alice Pugh.
Description?
20 years old, 5'3", about 15 stone. Brown hair, grey eyes, wearing Macintosh and black tam.
Thanks very much. Give me the address again, will you?
93 Fenton Street.
Right. I'm going out to see the girl's father, Moffat. Before anything else, we've got to get her out. Broadcast a description. Crisis too, but nothing to be done about him until she's safe.
Yes, sir.
I drove down to Fenton Street and number 93. The girl's father, Harold Pugh, was a tall, grey-haired man, whose hands twisted nervously as clasped each other while we talked.
It's very kind of you to come, Inspector. Very kind, I'm sure.
I'm only sorry, Mr. Pugh, that I can't bring you definite news.
I don't know what to do. She's a good girl. She looks like her mother used to. She's awfully pretty, you know.
Yes, she is, sir. I could see that.
She promised to be home early today. That's why I called the police when it got so late.
I can only say, sir, that everything is possible is being done to find her.
It's hard, Inspector. It's hard for a widower. Not that she's been difficult to bring up. She's a good girl. She's my girl. She's my kid. Alice.
I'm sorry, Mr. Pugh. I'm sorry.
I knew something was wrong when I came home. No lights on. We're going to have supper in the park, picnic-like. She was going to go dancing with a young man after, and now she's out in the dark. She's out there somewhere. Maybe.
Perhaps a spot of whiskey?
No. I'm all right, really. It's only when I think of the waiting. You understand?
Of course.
She worked in the city, you know. Not the sort of job she wanted, though. Alice always fancied the films. Pretty enough for them.
There's no reason for the man to hold her, Mr. Pugh. He only wanted her in order to escape.
If anything's happened, what'll I do? They grow up, they go away. Something like this happens. She's all I have. No, I won't think about that again. She's all right. I know it is. Oh, I put the kettle on before you came, Inspector. Will you have a cup before you go?
Awfully good of you, sir. I should like that very much. We sat in the kitchen of that house, the father whose hands shook so that tea spilled over the rim of his cup, and I, a policeman trying to play the part of a casual friend. We spoke of cricket and the bright future of England's soccer team. Half an hour later, the doorbell rang.
Alice! Alice, my girl! Are you all right, honey? Are you...
Right as rain, Mr. Pugh. Right as rain she is. Fit as a fiddle.
I was near beside myself. Come on in. I got some hot tea in the kitchen. And you too, Barry.
I met her on the corner as I was at... Hello, who's this?
Oh, the inspector. This is Chief Investigator Black. Barry, my future son-in-law. Barry, Mullen, Inspector Ellis. Honey, it's all right. It's all right, girl. You're home. It's all right.
She had a nasty time. Told me about it on the way.
Miss Pugh, I'm terribly sorry. I want you to know that all the time we had no choice but to let him take you.
It was horrible. He frightened me so. Oh, that gun.
He didn't hurt you?
No, but I was afraid. Every minute I was afraid.
Do you think you can answer one or two questions?
Well, now, Inspector? That's a bit thick, after all. I mean,
it's all right, Barry.
Well, where did he take you? And where did the cab stop?
I'm not sure. I kept begging him to let me go. We stopped somewhere in Brixton. He ran off down the road and I took the tube.
And that was all?
Yes, I came home and I met Barry at the corner. That's all. Oh, Dad, Daddy.
Oh, sweetheart.
Poor kid. Fair turned me when I saw. I hope you get him, that's all. I'd like to be there for it.
We'll get him, Mr. Mullen.
Take her in the kitchen, Barry. I've got some nice hot tea there.
Right you are, Daddy. Come on, love.
Oh, Barry, I never thought I'd see you, Daddy. Oh, it's awful.
Oh, now, try not to think about it. It's no harm done.
Keep an eye on her, Mr. Pugh. I don't think there's any danger, but I'd rather she didn't leave the house for a day or so.
Oh, not an earthly chance, Inspector. She's safe now.
Yes, well, good night, Mr. Pugh.
Good night, Inspector, and thanks. Thank you so much. If you follow my meaning.
Oh, I understand, sir. Good night. At the yard, I had Moffitt obtain a complete weather report for the day. It was at this moment a minor point, but it could come in handy later. I was going over that report when the phone rang. Chief Inspector Black?
Hello, Black. Mellon's here.
Hello, Mellison.
I say, we've got a body downstairs. Thought it might interest you. A smash and grab case on Regent Street today.
A body?
Oh, just brought in. Shot through the head. One of the boys you're after, I think.
Are you sure?
Yeah, the one in the church. I think name's Grice. William Grice.
For refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. When your mouth feels dry, when you're warm or tired, Wrigley's Spearmint is really refreshing. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you feel your best and do your best. So for chewing enjoyment plus pleasant refreshment, chew delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Now, the second act of pursuit in Petticoat Lane.
3 minutes after Mallinson's call, I was looking down at the corpse of William Grice. His head was not a nice thing to see. Whoever had done the work stood close behind him and fired a 38 calibre pistol. I learned that the body had been discovered on the banks of the Thames near to the Blackwall Tunnel. Grice's body was turned over to physical and chemical laboratories for thorough tests. His pockets were empty, but we hoped that his clothing might turn up a clue. In my office, Moffitt and I went over Grice's file and came across an address. It was his last known residence. 128 Petticoat Lane. And so we drove down to this dreary by-road of London's East End. A fog had begun to settle over the slum district, but it didn't affect the clamour of barrow and stall. The place becomes alive at night, and everything is sold in this outdoor market, from a cracked china to a human life. Moffitt and I pushed our way through the shouting crowds and made our way to number 128 Petticoat Lane.
I'll take two. Scarf, not far anymore.
Here, lovely bit of haddock. Take it home, gents, make the old woman laugh. Oh.
Nice piece of haddock there for Mrs. Moffitt, don't you think?
With or without the flies, sir.
You're finicky, Moffitt.
I dare say, sir. this would be it, on 28.
Rather a shame the Nazis missed some of these places when they bombed London.
If you ask me, sir, they missed purposely so as to give rats like Grice a place to hide.
It won't do him any good now, Moffat.
You?
Scotland Yard. We're inquiring about William Grice.
Never heard of him.
Wait a moment, sir. I know this man. Nobby Thompson. Pitched him myself in 47 for cat burglary.
Well, well, well. If it ain't my old chum, Sergeant Belly of Pork Moffat. How are you, old cough drop?
None of your lip, Thompson. What about Grice?
Oh, it breaks my poor bleeding heart to tell you, Sergeant. But I never heard of him. Oh, what's the matter? Did he do someone in?
How long have you been living here?
Months and months, General.
Moffat, when was Grice last known to be here?
6 weeks ago, sir.
Oh, you mean here, in this place? Oh, well, only a week, if you follow me. I thought you meant, how long in Petticoat Lane?
Let me alone with him for 5 minutes, sir, and I'll take it.
It's quite all right, Moffat. By the way, Thompson, have you been out tonight?
No. Oh, well, I got some fish and chips from a stall earlier, but that's all.
And you didn't leave Petticoat Lane?
Nah.
I see. Thanks very much. I'm sorry to have disturbed you.
Oh, happy to oblige, your worships. Do call again for tea.
Oh, I'd like to.
So should I, Moffat. But it wouldn't do any good. I think we've got something, though. He was lying.
Oh, sir? You think he knows that Grice is dead?
I'm not certain, but he's been out. He lied about that. There was mud on his shoes.
Queer, sir. And after that weather report?
I think we'll get a warrant and search this place.
I'll have it issued, sir.
And we better keep an eye on... Quickly! Moffat! That man! Coming this way!
Where, sir?
There! Oh, blast! He's turned away! He's running!
I can't see him now, sir. The fog! He went down there, I think.
Oh, slow down. Slow down, Moffat. It's no use looking. He's away.
Who do you think it was, sir?
I'm not sure. I couldn't see his face, but I recognised the walk.
He must have seen you, sir.
Yes, I think you'd better stay here, Moffat. Keep an eye on the place. I'll send a plainclothes man down to relieve you. If anyone goes in to see Thompson, let me know. Follow him if he goes out, and be careful. I sent a man to Petticoat Lane, and a little while later, Moffat returned. Nobby Thompson hadn't left the place, and no one had gone in. Tired, Moffat?
A little, sir, but it's a puzzle of this case.
In some ways, Moffat. Look here. We know there were three men involved in a smash and grab. One was Grice, and he's dead.
Thompson?
Possibly. They split up after they left the car. Grice goes to St. George's Church, but why? Why not run as far and as fast as he could away from Regent Street?
Well, sir, we were after him.
True, but it's almost as though he made for the church purposely.
He's beyond me, sir.
Well, who carried the loot?
Well, it wasn't much, sir. Half a dozen watches, 3 bracelets and a tray of cheap rings. And £100 at the outside.
And for that, 2 murders? But who carried them? Grice, perhaps?
Might have, sir.
Two plans. If the escape by car failed, plan B.
Don't follow you, sir.
I'm not sure myself, but if it's the way I think it is, it's neat, Moffat. Very neat. Well, come on. There's nothing more we can do tonight. We'll have more to go on in the morning. See you at 9, Moffat. The next morning, physical laboratory turned up the first piece of evidence. William Grice had carried the loot in his pockets. There were fragments of a watch crystal which had fallen through a hole into the lining of his coat. Then one of our police informers notified us that Nobby Thompson had been seen in the vicinity of the stolen car used by 3 men before the attack on the jeweller's shop was made. We were fairly sure then of our second man. That left one more. But based upon my own investigations, I was reasonably certain of the arrest before the day was over. Moffat and I went back to Petticoat Lane armed with a warrant.
Oh, blimey, don't you blokes never get wore out? I never touched him. It's truth, I didn't. Bill was me chum. I wouldn't have done anything like that, did
Last night, Mr. Thompson, you said you didn't know him and that you hadn't left Petticoat Lane.
Well, that's right.
Yet, there was fresh mud on your shoes, although it hasn't rained a whole week. We also know that you were near Regent Street last night. You were seen there.
You're twisting me, that what? You're taking advantage of me. You're public school and you're taking advantage.
Our scholastic backgrounds don't interest me, Mr. Thompson, but you do. I'm arresting you and charging you with...
It wasn't me did it. It wasn't me, I'll tell you.
Hello, Nob. Hey, what's...
Barry, coppers!
Oh.
Look out, Moffat. He's got a gun.
Let go. Let go.
No, you don't. I'll take that. Both of you stay where you are.
Well, Mr. Barry Mullen, isn't it? You were here last night, weren't you? I thought I recognised you in the fog. How thoughtful of you to come, and it saves me the trouble of having to bring you in.
I was just visiting my friend, S.O.
Your choice of friends has been most unwise, each to the other. I'm certain that Grice learned that. Too late for him, though. Come along. Before we took them down to the yard to formally charge them, Moffat retrieved the evidence in Nobby Thompson's room. 6 gold watches, one with a broken crystal, 3 bracelets and a handkerchief full of semi-precious rings. Barry Mullen had come to Petticoat Lane to divide the spoils, and after being charged, he confessed to the killing of both the clerk in the shop and William Grice, the latter because of a quarrel over a fair distribution of their meagre acquisitions. The obviousness of the case and its simplicity was all the more horrible because of the value placed on 2 lives. There was another facet too, which meant the ruining of a third and innocent life. He took me to the little house on Fenton Street.
Sit down, Inspector. Sit down. Alice, Chief Inspector Black is here. Have you caught the man yet?
Yes, we have, Mr. Pugh.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm not a vindictive man, Inspector, but I hope they put him their way.
They will, sir.
Oh, Alice. Put the kettle on, please. You'll have a...
Not today, sir. I want to tell your daughters what's happened.
They caught him, Alice.
We caught someone else, too. Your young man, Barry Mullen.
Barry?
Both he and a man named Thompson were involved in the robbery.
You must be wrong, Inspector. Barry? Oh, no.
They were both implicated in the robbery and the murder of William Grice.
Barry!
I don't understand.
Grice was killed on the bank of the Thames. There were footprints in the mud. Last night, when Mr. Mullen came in, there was mud on his shoes. The same mud was on Thompson's boots. We have casts of the footprints and we can match them.
But Barry, that's impossible. Why, Alice's shoes were muddy yet...
Be quiet, Dad, be quiet.
I know, Mr. Pugh, I noticed that too. It puzzled me last night because she said she'd taken the tube at Brixton and come straight home. It hasn't rained for a week. There were imprints of a woman's shoe at the scene of the murder.
Alice, honey, tell him it's nonsense. It is, Alice. That man forced you to go with him, didn't he?
Oh, he knows, Dad. I'm sorry.
Miss Pugh, you went to St. George's Church with the express purpose of meeting one of the gang in case they were forced to split up. Is that correct?
Yes.
It happened to be Grice who was carrying the stolen jewels.
Barry worked it out. He knew the police would work awful fast in Regent Street, so he arranged to have me in the church to get the stuff away if necessary. Then you and the other policemen were so close behind Bill that he didn't have time to get away. So I put on the act the way I did to get us both ways. It was good acting, wasn't it?
Very good, miss. Then you and Grice met the other two as planned. You were there during the quarrel.
Yes.
But why? Why? Why weren't you happy, honey? Why?
I don't know, Dad. Excitement, I suppose. Barry liked doing exciting things and making lots of money. I was bored with my job. I suppose that's all.
I think perhaps when you came home last night, miss, you overreacted a bit. I wondered about it then, and of course, your shoes.
May I get my hat and coat?
Of course.
Don't say anything. Don't say anything. Just take her away. It's my fault. It's my fault. I should have been a better father to her.
No, sir, I don't think so. It's not your fault.
I'm ready now. Bye, Dad.
We left the tall grey man in his lonely house, and I don't think that as long as she lives, his daughter will ever forget the look in his eyes. Pursuit. And the pursuit is ended.
Remember, friends, for refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. There's lots of lively, real mint flavor in it to cool your mouth, freshen your taste, and sweeten your breath. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, at work or play, always keep delicious Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. For refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley Spearmint Gum. You've been listening to an American Radio Theater's recreation of a lost old-time radio show and its original commercials. Pursuit in Petticoat Lane was from the series Pursuit. Its original broadcast date was May 10, 1951. It was directed tonight by Ivan Curry. You heard Dr. Robert Perks as Peter Black, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Moffat, Pat McNally as Constable, Marge Lutton as Alice, Dave Parker as Pew, Renaud Leboeuf as Barry, Mike Wheeler as Mallinson, Greg Porter as Nobby. The electronic wizardry was done by Ron Ailey, sound effects by Penny Swanberg, Harry Thiel, and Marilyn Wilt, music by Mary Moore Campagna. I'm Kim Turner, whom you heard as Grice and the narrator. Pursuit, originally brought to you by Wrigley Spearmint Gum, was produced and directed in 1951 by Elliot Lewis and written by Anthony Ellis. Music was composed and conducted by Eddie Dunstetter. Ben Wright starred as Inspector Peter Black, with Raymond Lawrence as Sergeant Moffat. Eileen Erskine was heard as Alice and William Johnstone as Mr. Pugh. Featured in the cast were Lou Krugman, Byron Kane, John Stevenson, and Nelson Welsh. This is ART, the American Radio Theater.
We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first a few words from ART. Hi, I'm Harry Thiel. ART's ensemble of actors bring new life into classic stories from the days of old-time radio, as well as bringing new audio dramas to full imagination. There are lots of great stories out there just waiting for the nod of recognition. Adventure, romance, westerns, mysteries, comedies, historical stories based on real life. Maybe even you have a story. Right now we're in the process of breathing new life into Zorro. Please have a look at our website for more information, AmericanRadioTheater.org. And now, back to our treasures, old and new, from ART.
We shift gears to have a listen of The Kraft Music Hall from January 8th, 1948.
Starring Al Jolson with Oscar Levant, Lou Bring and his orchestra and chorus, and our guest, William Powell.
So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come,
folks, this is young Al Jolson in the old Kraft Music Hall with an old song that may warm some up, well, it'll warm up your memories. Folks, this is really an oldie. Come on, Lou Bring, let's start the revival. Thousands of years ago and maybe more, out on an island on a lonely shore, Robinson Crusoe landed one fine day. No rent to pay, no wife to obey. His good man Friday was his only friend. He didn't borrow or lend. They built a little hut, lived there till Friday, but Saturday night it was shut. Where did Robinson Crusoe go with Friday on Saturday night? Every Saturday night they were starting to roam, and on Sunday morning they come staggering home. On this island live wild men in cannibal trimmings. and where there are wild men and very wild women. Where did Robinson Crusoe go with Friday on Saturday night? Where did Robinson Crusoe go with Friday on Saturday night? Every Saturday night, they would start in a row, and on Sunday morning, they come staggering home. They went hunting for rabbits. When the weather grew colder, the Crusoe came home with a hair on his shoulder. Where did Robinson Crusoe go with Friday on Saturday night?
Al, is it true what Luella Parsons said last Sunday?
You mean about my new baby?
Yes, is it true?
Right, Oscar. Mrs. Jones and I adopted a beautiful little 4-week-old baby boy.
Congratulations. It's really wonderful.
Thank you, Oscar. And let me tell you, this being a father is marvelous. Honestly, there's nothing like it.
Yes, there is, being a mother. But...
Well, you can say anything you want, Oscar, and it won't bother me. I'm the happiest man in the world. I'm going to raise that little kid to be a real boy. Yes, sir, we're going to be pals. We're going to hike and fish together, go swimming, and when he's about 15 years old, I'll play football with him.
Play football?
Yeah.
Well, when the kid's 15, you'll be in your 70s.
That's all right. I'll let him carry the ball.
Well, I suppose you've got a future already planned.
Yeah.
But if my advice is worth anything, don't let him be an actor.
But Oscar, that's just what I want my kid to be. I thought we might even make a movie short with him, you know, and call it The Little Jolson Story.
It's a good idea, but who'd play the part?
What do you mean, who'd play the part?
Won't you have to wait till Larry Parks has a baby?
Oscar, look, my kid will do his own acting. He's going to follow right in his father's knee steps. Oh, say, Oscar, he's the cutest little fellow you ever saw. But you know something? This puzzles me. He won't play with rattles. He only likes to play with money.
Well, don't let him play with more than $1 million at a time. You might spoil him.
My baby's going to have nothing but the best. Why, you ought to see the way he drinks milk and eats cheese.
Well, a baby only 4 weeks old doesn't eat cheese.
As long as I work for the Kraft people, he'll eat cheese and like it.
Well, Al, I'm very happy for you, and I'd like to express my feelings about this whole thing with a little poem. It's dedicated to your little son, Asa Jr.
Gee, that's sweet of you, Oscar. I didn't think you had it in you.
It's nothing to do with what's in me. Yeah. This is a poem. It goes like this. This is a poem.
Yeah.
For Azencat.
Yeah.
It isn't home without the patter of baby feet.
Yeah.
It isn't home without the dighties drying so neat.
Yeah.
It isn't home without a kid to call you Poppy. It isn't home. But it isn't half as sloppy.
Oscar, that was wonderful. But if you really want to dedicate something to my new baby, how about going to the piano and playing something? You know, a nice classical number.
Does the kid understand the classics?
Even better than me.
Okay. For little Asa, here's a baby version of Claire de Lune.
Thank you.
breakfast at your house get a little humdrum. So here's a tip that'll make the family pleased as punch. Set out a creamy white square of Philadelphia brand cream cheese to spread on the toast. Mmm, that rich, delicately fresh cream cheese is great with a toast and morning coffee. Mighty wholesome and nutritious, too. And for Sunday breakfast, when you splurge a bit, try delicious Philadelphia brand cream cheese on hot muffins or waffles or pancakes. Those are real melt-in-the-mouth combinations when you have the rich cream cheese that's always fresh tasting. Genuine Philadelphia brand cream cheese, you know, is guaranteed fresh by Kraft. And that's why smart shoppers always look to see the name Philadelphia brand on every package of cream cheese they buy.
Chopin Waltz. I started a plate a few weeks ago and didn't finish it.
Are you going to play the whole thing now?
I'm going to play it on the installment plan. And here's the down payment.
Oh, Oscar. Oscar, when I hear you play so beautifully, I realize how little I know about high-class music.
I realize how little you knew a long time ago.
But I love it. I really do. I love that piece you played just before the man talked about the Philadelphia cream cheese. I love it.
That was Debussy.
That was what?
Debussy, no. that was the first time I ever played it before Philadelphia cream cheese.
Well, look, Oscar, I don't want to appear ignorant, but...
Why not?
Well, look, let me finish what I'm saying. You're jumping on me. I was saying, I don't want to appear ignorant.
And I said, why not?
Well,
when a man says he doesn't want to appear ignorant, I just don't know why he doesn't, if he is. Al, don't you think I talk too much?
Yeah, you do, especially tonight. Look, Oscar, all I wanted to ask you was to tell me about that guy, Debussy.
Who?
Debussy, no? Debussy, who wrote the song you played, that's all.
Well, Al... He was the greatest talent of his time.
Something like me?
You'll have to decide that for yourself. A contemporary once described Debussy as a musician of genius who has the forehead of a Pekingese dog, a horror of his neighbor, a fiery glance, and a slightly husky voice.
Sounds more like Georgie Jessel. Oscar, what I was trying to say was that you and I don't seem to have anything in common. You play that high-tone music and I sing the popular stuff.
I like popular music, too, especially the way you sing it. I think you're great.
Thanks, Oscar. I think you're greater than I am.
I agree with you. Let's noodle something.
Let's noodle something, yeah.
What mood are you in?
Well, tonight, sure, I think I'm in the mood to sing an old Irish song.
That's got to be My Wild Irish Rose.
Sure, and you said it.
My wild Irish rose, the sweetest flower that grows. You may search everywhere, but none can compare with my wild Irish rose. My wild Irish rose, the dearest flower that grows, and someday for my sake let me take the bloom from my wild Irish rose.
Al, what other Irish songs do you know?
Well, now, I know Mother McCree, I do.
You you can't sing Mother McCree, Al.
And sure, why can't I?
At the climax of the song, there's a very high note in it. Do you think you can make it?
Morton Downey makes it, and he's much older than I am.
Morton Downey changes his tonsils every 1,000 miles.
Come on, Oscar, wrap your shillelagh around, and let's try Mother McCree.
Sure, I love the dear silver that shines in your hair. And the brow that's all furrowed and wrinkled with care. I kiss the dear fingers, so toil worn for me. Oh, God bless you and keep you.
Oscar tonight somehow or other, my heart is filled with music. And I'd like to sing a song. I'd like to sing a song I sang a couple of months ago. If I only had a match.
Poor kid. Imagine a man with all his money and he hasn't got a match.
If I only had a match, then my cares I'd soon forget. All I need would be a match. If I had a cigarette, and if I had a cigarette, I could watch the smoke rings curl, but I'd really be all sad. If I only had a girl, if I had someone like you to hurry to each night. In a cozy bungalow with no such sweet delight, we could raise a family and a little garden patch. And to think this all could be if I only had a match. If I had someone like you to hurry to each night, in a cozy bungalow with no such sweet delight, we could raise a family and a little garden patch. And to think this all could be if I only had a match.
Rebop.
My friends, if I'm elected, I promise you I will cut taxes. I will lower prices. I'll raise wages. I'll build roads. I'll build dams. I'll put a chicken in every pot. I'll put a car in every garage.
Just a moment. Just a moment, Mr. Powell.
Please, Sonny, don't interrupt me. Don't go home until you're old enough to vote.
Thank you.
Friends, I promise you...
But, Bill, wait a minute. This is the Kraft Music Hall.
I promise... Oh, is it? Oh,
gosh, I'm sorry, Al, but, this is funny, Al. Since I made the senators indiscreet, I keep forgetting myself. Every time I see a gathering of people, I start to climb on my soapbox. I'll put a chicken in every pot, a car in every garage.
Bill, please, you shouldn't take those picture pots so seriously. What if I took the part I played in the Jolson story seriously?
Well, how could you? You didn't play it.
What?
Truthfully, Al, I thought you were wonderful.
Thanks.
Those songs you sang, the nostalgia of those scenes where you struggle up to success, really brought tears to my eyes.
Gee, thank you, Bill. Nice to receive praise from someone like you. After all, you won the New York Critics Award for Best Actor. Nothing like that ever happened to me.
Well, now, don't you feel badly, Asa. Well, I didn't do so much to win the award. In fact, I did just one simple little thing.
What was that?
I was great.
He's modest like I am. Anyway, Bill, I still think your winning that acting award was wonderful.
Well, thanks, Al, but you know my childhood ambition I've never realized. I really wanted to be a scientist.
I'm very interested in science. In fact, I once perfected a device so that when a girl is tired and hungry, it automatically feeds her.
What did you call it? What did you call it, Oscar?
A man.
Boys, wait, look, wouldn't it have been wonderful if we all had been scientists? Can't you see us in our spotless laboratory working on the greatest invention of modern times? Dr. Powell, Dr. Levant, and Dr. Jolson, man in white, battling for humanity.
Dr. Powell, this experiment has got to be successful, or we'll be the laughingstock of our profession, sir. Today, when I went down the street, people pointed at me and laughed, called me crazy. Little boys threw stones at me.
Dr. Jolson, you shouldn't have stopped to sing.
Well,
I want this great experiment to be a success, but I keep hearing an inner voice saying, Dr. Levant, you're a failure. You're a failure.
Yes, my inner voice haunts me with the same words. Dr. Powell, you're a failure. You're a failure.
Funny. My inner voice just keeps saying, Jolie, you're so wonderful.
I'm terribly discouraged, Dr. Powell. Night after night, I've sat here with my eye glued to this microscope.
Why don't you rest?
I can't get my eye loose.
Well, let's not brood. Now let me explain this experiment. As you know, methyl iodide, if dissolved in an inert solvent and treated with metallic sodium, forms sodium iodide. And the two methyl groups join together, forming ethane, CH3CH3. Dr. Jolson, do you follow me?
Yes, but at quite a distance, really.
Well, gentlemen, let us examine this culture under the microscope. What do you think, Dr. Jolson? And you, Dr. Levant?
I think, too.
You know, if this turns out right, it will be an invaluable vaccine. Be certain that you know the formula.
Wait, I'll write it down.
No, you mustn't. It might fall into enemy hands. Just memorize it. And when you have it memorized, destroy your mind.
I can vouch for Dr. Joseph. Dr. Powell, let's check the experiment. I'm anxious to know the results.
Very well. Now, Dr. Levant, add 5 cc's of aqueous solution.
Got it.
Dr. Jolson, add the 24-hour broth culture of Staphylococcus aureus.
I'll add it, but I don't know what it means.
Now, quickly, 3 cc's of hydrochloric.
Right.
1 ounce of potassium permanganate.
Right.
And a box of guzz.
Why the box of guzz?
No use taking chances. Well, now, there, gentlemen. We'll warm it slowly over the Bunsen burner.
Mm-hmm.
If the solution turns green, we have been successful.
Look, it's changing color.
But wait, it isn't green. It's red.
Well, that's close enough. Well, now I must test it on myself. 1 cc. A slight scratch of the needle and... Oh, the reaction is wrong. I'm going fast. Oh, gentlemen, it's been grand working with you. But we all have to go sometime. Every scientist takes this chance. Gentlemen, goodbye.
But you haven't scratched yourself with a needle yet.
Of course not. You think I'm crazy? Nevertheless, gentlemen, we have discovered the greatest cure in the world.
Wonderful. What does it cure?
What does it cure? What does it cure? Gentlemen, we face our greatest challenge. For our next project, we must invent a disease that this cure is good for.
You know the clever little trick of flipping the famous Philadelphia brand cream cheese? Well, here's a 2-minute kitchen trick that turns an ordinary dessert into something super special. Just put a package of genuine Philadelphia brand cream cheese into a little bowl.
Add a very small amount of milk and whip it up with a spoon. In a hurry, that rich and wonderfully fresh-tasting cream cheese gets fluffy light. And here's a licking good topping for gingerbread, baked apples, baked pears, or a one-crust fruit pie. Just be sure you do this trick with a cream cheese that's guaranteed fresh by Kraft, the one and only Philadelphia brand. Every time you buy cream cheese, make sure that the packages are marked with the word Philadelphia, the brand that's been famous for flavor more than 60 years.
Folks, one of the most wonderful memories I have of all my years in show business is the memory of a beautiful young girl who rose from an obscure little dancer in a small-time vaudeville act to become one of the brightest stars on Broadway. And believe me, no one deserves success any more than this talented, gorgeous girl. Marilyn Miller was her name. One of her greatest shows was Flo Ziegfeld's Sally. And I'm sure many of you remember Marilyn when she sang Look for the Silver Lining. Look for the silver lining whene'er a cloud appears in the blue. Remember somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing to do is make it shine for you. A heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life.
Starring Spencer Tracy and Lana Turner. Tune in again next Thursday when our special guest will be Bing Crosby. This is Ken Carpenter saying goodnight. Stay tuned into this station to hear Jack Carson with Eve Arden, who will follow immediately.
Add extra zest and flavor to your meals by using Kraft prepared mustard. Kraft salad mustard is a light golden mustard made for those who prefer a mild flavor. For those who like a sharper mustard, there's Kraft mustard with snappy horseradish added. You can use these creamy mustards in many appetizing food-saving ways. Look for and buy both of these delicious Kraft mustards in your food store tomorrow.
Hey, thanks for listening. But I'm out of time for today. So, see you next time.